A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel's been on an EDC shopping spree in the US and noticed something that's been bothering him for years now. He's hunting for everyday carry gear. Pouches, organizers, the kind of stuff that needs to actually hold up. And Amazon, which used to be his go-to, has become a mess. Sponsored listings everywhere. All caps Chinese brands with names engineered to sound like a Midwestern hardware store. He's not anti-China. He specifically seeks out certain Chinese brands in their niches, but the marketplace itself has lost whatever filter it once had. His first Amazon purchase was an SAT prep book when he was 18, so he's got real history with the platform, and watching it degrade stings. He prefers buying online because retail showrooms pressure him, and he likes studying spec sheets at his own pace. His question is whether any online marketplace has found that middle ground, the convenience of e-commerce with actual curation and selectivity. Because without that, he says, the whole thing devolves into chaos, especially when there aren't enough humans to keep up with the scale.
Oh, this is a good one. This is the kind of question where the answer gets worse, the more you think about the incentives.
Start with what's actually broken.
Right. So Amazon's marketplace today is fundamentally not a store. It's an advertising platform that happens to ship boxes. The thing Daniel is reacting to, the sponsored listings, the alphabet soup brand names, the sense that you can't trust what you're looking at, that's not a bug. It's the business model working exactly as designed.
Designed by who, though? Because the Amazon Daniel remembers from the SAT prep book era wasn't this.
No, and that's the shift. Amazon started as a retailer. They bought inventory, they sold it, they stood behind it. Then they opened the marketplace to third-party sellers, which gave them infinite selection without carrying inventory risk. Then they launched fulfillment by Amazon FBA, which meant any seller could ship a container of product to an Amazon warehouse and have it show up with Prime shipping. And then they built the advertising business on top of all of it. Today, Amazon makes more money from seller fees and ads than it does from selling its own products. The incentive is to have as many sellers as possible competing for the buy box because that competition drives ad spending.
So the search results page is basically a auction.
It's an auction with an algorithm that optimizes for conversion, not for durability, not for authenticity, not for whether the thing will still work in 6 months. Conversion. Did you click and buy? And the fastest way to convert is to have a listing that looks good in photos, has a price that undercuts the known brand, and has a name that sounds trustworthy, V.A. Vanquist.
Vanquist is real?
Oh, it's real. And that's the thing. Daniel mentioned Maxpedition, which is an actual established EDC brand with a reputation. Vanquist is a name engineered to sit next to Maxpedition in a search result and make you think they're peers. They're both all caps. They both have that tactical syllable structure. One of them spent years building a reputation. The other spent time on keyword research.
And the algorithm doesn't know the difference.
The algorithm doesn't care about the difference. It cares that Vanquist has 4,000 reviews averaging 4.4 stars, most of which were written 3 days after delivery, and the price is $11 less. That listing converts. The fact that the stitching comes apart in 6 weeks doesn't register in any metric Amazon tracks.
So Daniel's experience of searching for an EDC pouch and getting a wall of sponsored noise, that's the system optimizing for itself, not for him.
And FBA makes it worse in a specific way. Commingled inventory. If you're a brand like Carhartt and you send 1,000 genuine jackets to an Amazon warehouse, and a counterfeiter sends 200 fake Carhartt jackets to the same warehouse, Amazon throws them all in the same bin. When I order a Carhartt jacket, the picker grabs the nearest one. It might be real, it might not. And when I get the fake one and leave a 1-star review, that review attaches to Carhartt's listing, not the counterfeiters. The brand takes the reputation hit.
That's an extraordinary design choice.
It's a logistics efficiency choice. Separating inventory by seller would cost more and slow things down, so they don't.
And Carhartt can't stop it?
They can try. Amazon has Project Zero, which is their brand protection program. It gives brands tools to remove counterfeit listings themselves without going through Amazon support. But you have to qualify for it, and it's reactive. You're playing whack-a-mole. The counterfeiter opens a new seller account under a different name, and they're back in a week.
So the counterfeit problem and the brand name pollution problem are actually the same problem. The marketplace has no mechanism for verifying who's selling what.
Right. And that brings us to the core tension Daniel's asking about. Curation versus scale. Amazon chose scale. The marketplace has millions of sellers and hundreds of millions of products. There's no number of humans you could hire to manually vet that catalog, so they use algorithms, and the algorithms optimize for what's measurable. Sales velocity, review count, conversion rate. Quality isn't measurable, so it drops out of the equation.
And the Amazon's choice badge?
That's the one people think means quality. It doesn't. It's based on sales velocity, return rate, and seller performance metrics. A product can be Amazon's choice and fall apart in a month as long as most people don't bother returning it. Sellers have gotten very good at gaming it.
So if Amazon is the cautionary tale, where does Daniel go instead? What's the middle ground?
Let's think about curation as a spectrum. On one end, you've got fully open marketplaces. Amazon, eBay, AliExpress, anyone can sell. The platform provides infrastructure. Quality is your problem. On the other end, you've got fully curated stores, a specialty retailer that stocks maybe 200 products and the owner has personally tested every one of them. In between, there are hybrid models that try to add trust without sacrificing all the selection.
Give me an example of the hybrid.
eBay's authentication program is the cleanest one for certain categories: sneakers, watches, handbags, trading cards. When you buy, the seller doesn't ship to you. They ship to a third-party authenticator. A human being opens the box, inspects the item, verifies it against the listing, and only then forwards it to you. If it's fake, you get refunded and the seller gets banned.
That's not algorithmic at all. That's a person with expertise.
That's a person with expertise at scale. eBay authenticates millions of items a year this way. It's expensive, it adds a day or two to shipping, and it only works for categories where the item value justifies the cost. You're not going to authenticate a $12 phone cable, but for a $200 pair of sneakers, it makes total sense.
And it changes the seller's behavior too.
Completely. If you know your item is getting inspected by someone who knows what to look for, you don't list fakes. The mere existence of the checkpoint filters out the bad actors before they even try.
So that's one model. What about Etsy? Daniel mentioned curation and selectivity. Etsy seems like it should be the answer, but I've heard mixed things.
Etsy is interesting because it started as the anti-Amazon, handmade goods, vintage items, small sellers. The curation came from community norms. Sellers had reputations, buyers left detailed reviews, the whole thing felt human. But Etsy's been public since 2015, and the pressure to grow has pulled them toward Amazon's model. They've loosened the handmade requirement. You could now sell designed by you but manufactured by a production partner. Which means a lot of what's on Etsy today is drop-shipped from the same factories that supply Amazon's alphabet soup brands.
So the curation eroded under growth pressure.
It did. But here's the thing. Etsy still has better discovery than Amazon for certain categories, because their search and recommendation algorithms are tuned differently. They're not selling ads as aggressively. And the seller review system still functions as a kind of decentralized curation. If a seller has 6,000 reviews and a 4.9 average over 8 years, that actually means something. It's not perfect, but it's a signal Amazon's flooded review system can't replicate.
Because Amazon reviews are gamed to death.
Insert a gift card for a 5-star review gamed to death. Etsy's smaller scale and different seller culture have kept that somewhat in check. Not entirely, but somewhat.
What about the really small end of the spectrum? Daniel's into EDC gear specifically. Are there curated retailers in that space?
This is where it gets good. CountyCom is the one that comes to mind. They're a small operation, they sell government surplus and military spec gear, and their catalog is tiny, maybe a few hundred products. Everything they sell, they've tested. They don't run sponsored listings because they don't need to. Their customers are people who know exactly what they want and trust that CountyCom has already filtered out the junk.
and the trade-off is selection.
And price, sometimes. But Daniel already made this calculation. He said he'd rather pay more for a Maxpedition pouch than gamble on a no-name brand. That's the curation premium. You're paying for someone else's judgment.
There's a whole community around this, isn't there? The Buy It For Life people.
Right. The Bifle community on Reddit and various forums. This is the grassroots curation layer that's emerged to compensate for marketplace chaos. Thousands of people posting long-term durability tests, comparing stitching, documenting which brands honor their warranties. It's entirely human-powered, entirely unpaid, and it's probably the most reliable quality filter that exists for consumer goods.
But it's not a marketplace. You can't buy through it.
No, you have to do the work. You read the threads, you find the brand, you go to their website or find a retailer that carries them. It's fragmented. But that fragmentation is also what keeps it honest. There's no single platform to capture and monetize the trust.
So, Daniel's question about a happy middle ground. Is the answer basically that nobody has solved it at Amazon scale?
I think the answer is that curation and scale are genuinely in tension, and the only models that work are the ones that accept limits. eBay's authentication works because it's category-specific, and the economics justify human inspection. Etsy works better than Amazon for certain things because it hasn't grown to Amazon's size, and its seller culture still has some norms intact. CountyCom works because it's tiny. The Bifle community works because it's decentralized.
Every solution is smaller than the problem.
Every solution that actually works is smaller than the problem, and that might just be the nature of it. Curation is a human activity. It requires judgment, experience, and time. You can't automate judgment. You can approximate it with algorithms, but the approximation breaks down as soon as someone has an incentive to game it. And on a marketplace the size of Amazon, the incentive is enormous.
What about Amazon's own attempts? They tried Amazon Handmade to compete with Etsy. They have Amazon Basics, which is the opposite of curation. It's Amazon using its data to identify popular categories and undercut its own sellers.
Amazon Handmade was a direct response to Etsy, and it never really took off because the seller experience is worse. Higher fees, less community, and sellers don't trust that Amazon won't study their sales data and launch a competing product. Which is exactly what Amazon Basics does. So the sellers who care about craftsmanship stay on Etsy or go independent.
That's a trust problem that goes both ways. Buyers don't trust the listings. Sellers don't trust the platform.
And once that trust is gone, rebuilding it's nearly impossible. Daniel's nostalgia for early Amazon is really nostalgia for a time when Amazon was a retailer, not a marketplace. When you bought from Amazon, you were buying from Amazon. They had skin in the game. Now they're a landlord collecting rent from tenants they don't screen.
So if you're Daniel, standing in front of a search results page full of VanQuest and sponsored listings, what's the practical move?
The practical move is to build your own curation layer. Use the Bifle community for research. Find the brands that have actual reputations. Maxpedition, Carhartt, the ones Daniel already knows. Buy direct from those brands' websites when you can. If you have to use Amazon, scroll past the sponsored results on purpose. Look for brands you've already verified elsewhere. Treat Amazon as a fulfillment service, not a discovery tool.
That's a lot of work.
It's more work than typing EDC pouch and clicking the first result. But it's less work than buying 3 pouches, returning 2, and still not being sure about the one you kept. Daniel said he likes studying spec sheets at his own pace. He's already doing the work. He just needs to route around the parts of the internet that are actively trying to deceive him.
And that's the thing that bugs me about this whole situation. The internet was supposed to make this easier. More information, more transparency, better decisions. Instead, we got an arms race between deception and detection. And the deception is winning.
The deception has better funding. Sponsored listings pay Amazon's bills. Authentic reviews don't.
Before we wrap up the main discussion, I want to come back to something Daniel said about retail environments. He doesn't like showrooms because he feels pressured. And I think that connects to the curation problem in a way that's not obvious.
Say more.
A good retail store. A really good one solves the curation problem with a human. The owner stocks things they believe in. They can tell you why they chose this brand over that one. You walk in, you trust the selection, you buy something. That's curation. What Daniel hates is the pressure to buy, not the curation itself. Online shopping removes the pressure, but also removes the curator. The question is whether you can get the curator back without the pressure.
That's exactly the middle ground he's asking about. And I think the closest thing, too, it's the small specialty retailer with a good website, CountyCom, Grafton. Places where the person who chose the products is still reachable, still answers emails, still stands behind what they sell. It's not a marketplace, it's a store. But it's online, so you can read the specs at 2 in the morning without anyone hovering.
The store that's actually a store.
The store that's actually a store, run by people who would be embarrassed to sell you something that breaks. That's the ingredient Amazon lost, the embarrassment.
Hilbert's been quiet this whole time, which usually means he's got something.
Hilbert, you've been sitting on your hands for 20 minutes.
I ran a store like that in 97.
Of course you did.
Surplus military gear. Alice packs, ammo pouches, the green wool blankets everyone wanted. I had a website, terrible, hand-coded HTML. The photos took 40 seconds to load on dial-up. But people bought from me because I wrote descriptions that actually told you what you were getting. If a pouch had a frayed strap, I said so. Sold about 40 orders a week.
What happened to it?
A bigger operation moved in around 2001. Undercut me on price with stuff that looked the same in photos but wasn't. Thinner nylon. Zippers that jammed. They had a better website and a bigger ad budget. I couldn't compete on price, and I couldn't explain the difference in a way that mattered to people who'd never held either product. Closed up in 03.
So you got VonQuest, Ed, before VonQuest existed.
I still have a box of inventory in my closet. Tactical fanny packs. Ordered too many. Thought they'd be the next thing.
Wait. Tactical fanny packs?
MOL, webbing on the belt. Well made, I'll give them that.
And you've just had them for 23 years.
I use one. Holds my Leatherman, flashlight, spare batteries, works fine.
You carry a tactical fanny pack.
It's not a fashion choice, it's practical.
I have so many follow-up questions, and I'm not sure which one to ask first.
The point is, the problem Daniel's describing, it's not new. The internet made it easier to sell things, which meant it was easier to sell bad things. The feedback economy on early eBay was supposed to fix that. Seller ratings, buyer reviews, the whole reputation system. It worked for a while, when the community was small enough that a bad review actually hurt. Then the platforms got big, and the reputation systems got gamed, same as everything else.
So you're saying, the golden age Daniel remembers was just a temporary phase, small enough to be self-policing, before the scale broke the trust mechanisms.
Every online community has a size where it works and a size where it doesn't. Amazon crossed that line years ago. eBay crossed it, came back a bit with the authentication thing. Etsy's crossing it now.
Your solution is to buy from forums and direct from manufacturer sites.
It's slower. You don't get prime shipping. But I know the name of the person who made the thing, or at least the person who chose to stock it. That's worth 2 extra days in shipping to me.
The box of tactical fanny packs, though. Are we talking about a dozen? 2 dozen?
17. I counted last year.
17 tactical fanny packs in a closet in Jerusalem.
14 now. Gave a couple away.
To who?
My brother-in-law. He uses his for fishing.
I don't know why I'm surprised by any of this.
You asked?
I did. I absolutely did.
Hilbert, do you think the authentication model, the eBay thing where a human inspects the item, could that ever work for something like EDC gear? Pouches and organizers?
The economics don't work. A $40 pouch can't support a $15 authentication fee. Sneakers and watches, the margins are there. For everyday stuff, the authenticator is you. You have to know what you're looking at.
Which brings us right back to doing the work.
Always did.
Where does that leave us? Daniel's asking for a marketplace that balances convenience and curation, and the closest thing we found is either small specialty retailers that don't scale, or authentication programs that only work for high-margin categories. The middle ground is narrow.
It's narrow, but it exists. eBay's authentication proves you can layer human judgment onto a massive platform if you're selective about where you apply it. Etsy proves that community norms can function as curation if the platform doesn't grow past the point where those norms break. And the small retailers, CountyCom, Grafton, dozens of others in every niche, prove that you can run a profitable online store where the curation is the product.
The pattern across all of these is that someone, somewhere, is personally accountable. An authenticator who puts their name on the verification. A seller with a reputation that took years to build. A store owner who answers their own email. The accountability is the curation.
That's what algorithms can't replicate. An algorithm can tell you what other people bought. It can't tell you whether those people had good judgment.
If you take one thing from this, it's that the degradation Daniel's seeing isn't inevitable. It's a choice Amazon made to prioritize scale over trust. And the alternatives, from eBay authentication to tiny EDC retailers to the Buyful forums, are all ways of choosing trust instead, at the cost of some convenience.
The cost is real, but it's lower than it looks. An extra day of shipping and 20 minutes of research versus the gamble of a marketplace that's optimized to sell you the thing with the best margins rather than the thing that lasts. For someone like Daniel, who already enjoys the research part, the trade-off barely registers.
The question I'm left with is whether AI eventually closes the gap. Could algorithmic curation get good enough to spot the VanQuests of the world before they flood the search results? Or does the arms race just accelerate? Better fakes, better detection, forever.
I think the arms race continues, and I think the human layer becomes more valuable, not less. When everyone has access to AI-generated listings and AI-generated reviews, the signal that matters is whether a real person you have reason to trust is willing to attach their name to a recommendation. That doesn't scale, but that's the point.
Thanks to Hilbert Flumingtop for producing, and for the tactical fanny pack revelation we're all still processing.
This has been My Weird Prompts. If you've got a weird prompt, send it to show@myweirdprompts.com.
We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth's slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.